Dr. Disc's Drive Time, a podcast recorded on my BlackBerry during my commute home from a hard day's work as an ed geek. On this program, we discuss education and technology and explore how these two seemingly diverse topics have become intrinsically entwined in the 21st century.
Hello, and welcome to the inaugural edition of Dr. Disc's Drive Time. This is episode 1 for the week of January 4th, 2010. Yes, 2K10, can you believe it? We have made it through the first decade of the new millennia, where many people didn't think we'd make it past Y2K. Here we are, 10 years later, into the 21st century, having further adventures in education and technology. So perhaps I should begin by telling you a little bit about myself. My name is James Govins. I am a district technology coordinator for a three high school district just outside of the city of Chicago. And I actually began my journey in ed tech a little over 12 years ago, almost a baker's dozen, when I took my first job in a school as a computer technician and moved on to becoming a network administrator, and have now reached the pinnacle of my success at this point, which is becoming a district technology coordinator. It's a job that I love dearly. I enjoy helping teachers find new and exciting technology and encouraging them and assisting them in finding ways to integrate it into their already existing curriculum. One of the things that I stress is that you do not have to be afraid of technology. You should go out there and try new things. And so that's kind of what this show is about. It's about education and technology and how those two topics work together to enhance learning in the 21st century. And as far as this podcast goes, the genesis of the idea occurred during last year when I was stuck in a massive traffic jam. Now, what's a geek to do when he's locked up in a car without all his little gadgets and toys? Well, one of these days when I was sitting in a parking lot, that's what we affectionately call the tollway here in the state of Illinois, I looked around and I saw my laptop, and yeah, I could blog, but that probably wouldn't be the smartest thing behind the wheel of the car. I could update my Facebook and Twitter statuses and all my social networking information while I was sitting there in 2-mile-an-hour traffic, and I did that a great deal. But I was actually bored one day, and I said, what else can I do while I sit here in order to not waste time? And what I discovered was I could actually use the voice recorder on my BlackBerry to plan my day for the next day, remind myself of things that I needed to do, whatever that may be. And that took on a life of its own, and I started realizing I can record for a long time. And therefore, I decided I would start trying to do a podcast. And I did a couple of shows, none of which were ever published. They're in the lost archives at this point, because I wasn't very happy with the way that they turned out. It was kind of literally flying by the seat of my pants driving down the expressway. So I've taken a little bit more time and planned out these shows beforehand, and have decided that what I will do is actually record the show on my Monday drive home from work, and then during the week kind of edit it down for content and for time, and then publish on every Friday of the week. So you may actually hear some clicking of the turn signals, the blower in the car keeping me warm during these frigid winter months up here in the tundra. Hopefully you won't hear any swearing or horn blowing. if that does occur, I'll do my best to edit it out. But it should be an entertaining and exciting experience over the course of the next year. So please forgive any pauses or ums and huhs as I speak to you from the driver's seat of my vehicle, because I do have to also concentrate on the task at hand, which is driving. So let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start, with a review of the technologies of the past decade. And let's start with an event, not necessarily a technology, but an event. How many people remember Y2K when we were all afraid that the planes would come falling out of the sky, ATM machines would be spitting out cash randomly, and computers would not work the way that we had grown accustomed to during the decade of the 90s? I remember that because I was very busily during that year prior to 2000, going through and making sure that every computer in the building that I worked at was going to be Y2K ready, updating the BIOSes and doing the testing. And certainly I did find that some of the BIOS clocks were off, but it wasn't going to be the catastrophic event that we all thought it would be, and certainly not as disastrous as we believed. And January 31st, 1999 came and went without much incident. So that was a good thing. That was a good start off to the new decade and the new millennia. During the first few years, in 2000 and 2001, the iPod became part of our culture. Instead of carrying around a CD player or a cassette player and all the cassettes and CDs that went with it, we were able to convert our catalogs, our audio catalogs, into digital libraries and take them wherever we went. And the iPod was probably the first technology craze of the 21st century, and it's just continued to grow to the point where we're able to actually watch videos and listen to podcasts. Perhaps you're even listening to my voice right now on your iPod. And that technology is going to continue to grow over the next 10 years, and we'll talk about that when we get to our future segment. Going green became all the rage in the 2000s as the Toyota Prius became readily available. Oh, sure, you could get the occasional hybrid car in the late 90s, but by the mid-2000s, hybrids had become ingrained in our society, and getting better gas mileage and quieter engines were becoming more and more prevalent. And unfortunately, during the past decade, the Chevy Volt did not release. It's a vehicle that is supposed to get 40 miles before even touching a drop of gas, purely off a battery charge. They are still planning on producing that vehicle, and hopefully it will release sometime in 2010. But I'm sure that the technology will continue to improve, and we will continue to work on going green in the coming years. In television, we saw the birth of reality TV that appealed to the voyeuristic tendencies of human nature, with shows like Survivor and The Amazing Race and American Idol. Can you imagine a world without Richard Hatch or Johnny Fairplay or Kelly Clarkson or Sanjaya, for that matter? These are people who came into our living rooms and basically saved television as we know it, because at that point, when Survivor came on the air, networks were struggling with ways to create new media and new television programming that would still be able to entertain us. And so they switched over to this concept of reality TV. And the reason that I mention this is because YouTube also came along during the past decade. And can you imagine a world without YouTube? I don't know. But when YouTube first came out, there was a lot of concern about the content that was being posted to YouTube. It was not moderated very well, and perhaps it still isn't, but it was mostly being posted by real people. Well, obviously, all the videos that are posted to YouTube are by real people, but the people who were actually doing the original posts were mostly teenagers and people who didn't have a whole lot going on in their lives as adults. And it gave everybody a chance for their 10 seconds of fame. So everybody was jumping on YouTube and making videos, and they weren't using good judgment. So a lot of the video quality or video content that we had during the first few years of YouTube was really not quality. It was mostly garbage. It was mostly just, you know, kids being silly and posting information. And you still see some of that today. But now, as the technology has matured, the older generation, and by older I mean, I don't know, maybe 25 and up, have started producing this quality content that they're posting on YouTube, and they're sharing information, And YouTube has actually become a very viable source of new and exciting information. I'll often go to YouTube to get a review from an individual who just bought a product that I'm interested in. And I'll watch that review and see what they had to say about it. I'll do reviews myself on YouTube and post those videos. And so it's become a way for us to organize that visual data in a meaningful way to our society. And that's based in part because of the birth of reality TV, and also in part because of the fact that our bandwidth has been increasing at exponential rates, and it's been easier for us to do things such as streaming video. And once YouTube had become firmly established as part of our society, it wasn't long before Web 2.0 took off and computing in the clouds actually started to create its roots. And what Web 2.0 is it's the ability to communicate and collaborate using applications that are available online and generally for free. So it started to really bring the world closer together. And it really started with sites like MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and Nings and Wikis. Oh my. And that's kind of the social networking aspect of the Web 2.0 sphere, if you will. And I know for myself, I can't actually go more than a day or two without getting the Twitter shakes if I haven't updated my Twitter status. And I'm sure some of you out there have the exact same problem. If you're away from Facebook or MySpace for a few days, you feel out of touch with your world, because what it's done is it's brought people together that you've known or have interest in, and you've created your own little society within these pages online out there in cyberspace. And it's changed the way that we relate to each other socially. There are people online that I would probably never talk to in a room, but that I absolutely find fascinating and am very interested in what they have to say. And I wouldn't have an opportunity to have a dialogue with these people because they either live on the other side of the world or are outside of my social status in reality. There are people who I wouldn't dream of going up and speaking to if I saw them on the street. However, I have no problem sending them a Twitter reply to something that they said. And maybe they'll respond to me and maybe they won't. But at least it gives me that opportunity, and it's changed the way that we think about how we relate to one another. And it's amazing to me that this is a technology that's only been around for a few years. Sure, we had chat rooms and instant messaging, but it's taken on a whole new vein when you can share the intimate moments of your life, and you get to choose what you share. You don't have to share everything, of course. Nobody wants to know how often you eat during the day or how many showers you take during the week. But, well, maybe there are people who are interested in that. I don't know. But I won't post that kind of information. I post relevant information that I find interesting and that I think people who know me would be interested in as well. So it's become a great way to make the world a little smaller and a little bit of a happier place. I think since social networking has come along, I myself have felt a little bit more socially engaged and as such have become a happier person. So thank you, social networking, for that. And I think part of the reason that the social networking sites started to become more and more popular is because our access to them became more readily available with the advent of Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi was not a technology that was necessarily invented during the first decade of the 21st century. However, it was the time during which Wi-Fi hotspots started popping up all over the place. You could take your computer to Starbucks or McDonald's or Barnes & Noble, your laptop with you, and be able to be connected to the internet. You were able to connect your phone to these social networking sites and be able to surf the web from anywhere and start to really become engaged in the world instead of just your little neighborhood. So Wi-Fi really became one of the guiding lights to where we are today because we were able to take technology with us on the go, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And we'll discuss that in the future segment as well, where mobile computing is probably going to be headed in the near future.
Additionally, technology seems to continue to get smaller on a daily basis. We've also seen in the last few years the creation of these netbooks that are cheaper versions of full laptops, but are able to connect to the internet and allow you to do some word processing and the like, and basically have a larger version of your cell phone. And I'm sure that's the direction that we're going with these netbooks, is that we're going to end up with slates that we carry around with us that are basically tablet computers, just larger scale versions of the iPhone. Additionally, we've seen electronic books come to fruition, and we're able to go to our local Barnes & Noble and download our favorite book for a few dollars, or even get free books from Google Books. I can't even begin to tell you the number of things that Google has done over the past decade that have made things better for us. But these Kindles and these Nooks and these Sony e-readers, and I'm sure in the next few years we're going to see even greater improvements in these, they're making it easier to carry information with you, not just books, but newspapers and blog articles and all the things that you would do stationary within the confines of your home, you're now going to be able to take with you on the road. And I really didn't think that I would be that interested in these e-readers until I was at a function a few months ago, and I wished that I had something to read because I was bored out of my skull. And I started actually looking into these things at that point. I'm the kind of guy that likes to turn the pages, curled up with a good book. I can't see curling up with a laptop or a piece of electronics. But they're on the rise, and they're coming, and they're going to be taking over the print media. I hate to say that, but it seems like it's true. So there we have just a few of the things that have happened during the first decade of the 21st century. And now we'll kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about what I think is coming down the pike. I get to play Nostradamus a little bit, and hopefully we last past his predictions of 2012 and are able to see some of what I think is coming in technology begin to appear in our daily lives. Perhaps the easiest way to segue into a vision of the future is to talk about vision itself. And this comes in the form of biotechnology. There is a gentleman at the moment by the name of Babak Parvez who is currently working on a project in which he is attempting to embed microchips into contact lenses. Now, the reason that he has stated for this is purely medical, is to be able to better correct our vision, as well as to give us a direct link to our doctor's offices, and they will be able to get vital statistics on us at the blink of an eye, quite literally, which would be wonderful for, you know, trauma situations and things of that nature. But there's a fun aspect to that, too, and there's been some rumor that these contact lenses will also be able to zoom in on objects and do things such as face recognition and maybe even bring your GPS directly into your field of vision. So you basically have a human interface device that was truly human in the fact that you were able to put technological information directly into your sight line. Much like the Terminators of the Terminator series. They had the ability to do face recognition and object recognition and zoom in on objects and do geolocation and that kind of thing. And wouldn't it be great if you were able to go to a cocktail party with a bunch of people that you hadn't seen in a while and be able to immediately recognize who they are because their name would pop up directly in your field of vision. I know that would certainly calm some of my fears about those situations. Biotechnology is going to continue to grow and enhance itself as we continue to learn more about DNA and genomes and how we can get in there and use microbiology to correct some of the problems that we have discovered. Maybe we will come up with a cure for cancer soon enough. I did read about a micro technology that is looking to block the genetic code that creates the AIDS virus. So we may be able to conquer cancer in the next 10 years. And wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Of course, these biocontact lenses may end up giving us cancer in the meantime, because somehow we have to have power to our brains to keep them running. And as of yet, wireless power has not quite yet been invented. However, if you were to head over to one of my favorite sites, TED.com, and do a search for wireless power, you would find a project that is happening right now. And that is a way to generate electricity without the need for wires, at least connecting your device to an outlet. Obviously, something would need to be plugged in to create the original power. But I watched this video at TED.com, and if you're not familiar with TED.com, some of the greatest minds of our times are not live, but they have been recorded there, and some of their best speeches and information are available for you. It's an absolutely fascinating site. That's TED.com. And one of these talks that's available for you, it talks about this wireless power. And I guess it works, from what I understand, based on a resonant technology, so based on getting that exact vibration correct to be able to power devices from across a room without having them need to be plugged in. And the gentleman who was demonstrating this was actually able to walk through the field of electricity and nothing happened to him. He didn't explode or catch fire or any of those bad things that we associate with electricity. He didn't have a heart attack and collapse right there in the middle of the TED stage. So wireless technology is probably going to be something that wireless powered technology is probably something that's going to be coming very soon. In fact, we're already seeing some of this in the form of these power mats. If you've seen the mats that you can put your cell phones and your PDAs and your laptops on and charge them without having to plug them into a wall, and that's kind of this technology that we're talking about. That probably the next level of that is going to be when these electronic cars that I was mentioning in our previous segment will be the first to engage this wireless power. One of my neighbors is a auto mechanic, and when I mentioned this to him, he said, "Oh, certainly, they're going to need those for the electronic cars that are on their way." So basically what he explained to me is they are working on a device that will be basically a floor mat in your garage that plugs into the wall, and when you pull into the garage, your car will get charged. You won't have to go to a charging station like a lot of us thought was going to be the case to recharge your batteries in your electric vehicles. So wireless electricity may be something that's coming in the near future. As I already mentioned, we are starting to look at text in different ways as well, and that includes the use of these Kindles and Nooks and Sony e-readers and the like. But text is going to be changing in other ways. For example, Xerox is working on a technology that will enable us to reuse paper. They are working on an inkless copying system so that we're able to make copies of something in a digital manner on actual paper, and then that degenerates over a period of time so that you're able to reuse the paper to create other copies of documents, handouts, things of that nature. So can you imagine not having to use more than 100 sheets of paper during the year to hand out information to your classes? As I said, going green is going to definitely continue to be a large part of our world going forward. While some of our technology is going to continue to shrink in size and maybe even become micro or nanotechnology, other technologies are going to continue to grow and take up more space. A prime example of this is a television that is internet ready that is already being demonstrated at some of these large conferences, and it's produced by Panasonic, and it's basically a combination of a smart board that you may have in your classroom and the new product Microsoft Surface. If you've been able to see that, you know that's a multi-touch display, and whereas the smart board pulls in different graphics and images and videos from the internet, the Surface is more for that interactive feel and touch. From what I can tell, what they've said about this Panasonic Life Wall, it measures 10 feet by 12 feet. It will literally take up a wall of your house or of your classroom, and you are able to do video conferencing with it, of course, watch television, certainly, and movies, and you'll also be able to connect to the internet and pull down images from Flickr or go out to Google Earth and have things life-size right there in front of your face. It also has face recognition, so it knows who you are when you walk up to it, if I hadn't mentioned that already. It also allows you to actually design the wall, so it looks like a wall in your home. You can put pictures and frames right there on the wall using this Panasonic Life Wall. Currently, the price point on this is $1,000 per diagonal inch. So really, you're looking at a television that will likely cost you $150,000. Just recently, they've also announced that they're working on 3D television that will not necessarily require you to wear 3D glasses. Again, this technology is going to be extraordinarily expensive when it first comes out, and probably only those individuals who are pure technophiles are going to have these in their homes that, and can, of course, afford them. But as with most things, they're going to come down in price, and it's going to be a common occurrence to walk into a room and be able to interact with one of the walls in that room, I predict, within the next 10 years. Over the past decade, we have been uploading more and more data to the internet, to the World Wide Web, that is rapidly becoming interconnected through social networking and social bookmarking and all those kinds of utilities that we're using today. And what I believe is going to happen, and in fact, the inventor of the internet also believes this, is that we're going to come up with a new type of protocol for the internet based on perhaps XML or RFD or OWL, one of those protocols, and it's going to make it much more easy to interconnect the data that is already on the internet and bring about what Tim Berners-Lee is already calling the semantic web. So it will be real easy to gather government data, for example. Maybe the census that's coming up in 2010 will be much easier the next time that we do a census, because we'll be able to do it online without somebody going door to door to write down information. You know, there's a whole lot of things that are going to be happening in the evolution of the World Wide Web. The internet as we know it will certainly be different in 10 years' time. Another invention that I have yet to see or even hear of, this may just be a pipe dream or a figment of my imagination, and I may be giving away a billion-dollar idea here, but I know that I don't have the wherewithal or the experience to create such a device. But I really do believe that we're going to be walking around in a few years' time with identikeys, our personalized information, our own tags about ourselves, so that when we do walk up to someone, we're going to have information readily available about that person that they want us to know about. We're already doing this, in effect, using sites like MySpace and Facebook and Twitter. We're already doing the social networking. The next logical step is to have some kind of personalized social networking that is embedded in some kind of a card, or maybe it'll be an iPhone app or something along those lines, where you walk up to someone and you're able to get information about them and find out if you want to talk to them or not, or, you know, what their interests are, so you can start up a conversation, that kind of thing. I really think, and this has come about a lot in my future conversation here, I really think that face-to-face communication is going to be improved by technology. I really believe that. We've been able to do it on the web. It doesn't make sense why we can't bring this into our daily lives right next to each other and be able to gather information quickly and easily without having to go through the awkwardness of what our social mores have created. So yes, perhaps that is somewhat of a pipe dream, the personal technology creation that I have dancing in my head. But that's the way that we're going to come up with these ideas, these new exciting ideas that we get engrossed in and become attracted to in technology. And, you know, I'm probably just at the tip of the iceberg, because what I've demonstrated for you today are things that are already being thought about, that are already starting to go into production. And while that's wonderful that we can have that kind of vision, there are people out there today who are thinking up new creations that aren't even on the radar yet. And who's going to bring us these new and inventive technologies? It's going to be those digital natives, the people who have come into the world not knowing anything but technology. Whether that be the children who are products of the 70s or 80s who grew up with video gaming systems, or whether that be the student who is graduating your high school class in the year of 2010 and is going on to achieve great things, they have wonderful visions of what's going to be coming in the future. And these are the people that you're educating today. Don't be afraid to let them develop new and exciting trends and go out and reach for the stars and achieve those technological dreams that you and I can only imagine.
And now for today's wonderful website.
Our very first website of the week also ties into the new year, in that a lot of people have gone ahead and made New Year's resolutions, some of which include becoming more organized. And in order to do that, I suggest that you head on over to a website called hipcal.com. That's HIPCAL.com. And while they recently have been bought out by a company called Plaxo, they still offer their free online calendar service. What this calendar does for you is it allows you to have a task list on the right-hand side, so you can check things off as you get them done, color-coded, so that you can, make things into different categories based on their color. And then you can also add things to your regular calendar. And it can be business-related or personal. They even allow you to create your own categories and subcategories and color-code those as well, so it's very obvious what is happening on the calendar for that particular day or month. And one of the nice things about this service is they will allow you to set alarms that will alert you either via email or via SMS messaging. And those alarms can be set from 0 minutes to a couple of days. It's a website definitely worth taking a look at if your plan is to become more organized this year. Well, I hope you have enjoyed the very first episode of Dr. Disc's Drive Time. I'm always open to questions, comments, and suggestions. You can drop me a line at jgubbins207@gmail.com. That's jgubbins207@gmail.com. It appears I have reached my destination. And so, until next week, this has been Dr. Disc's Drive Time. I hope you will join me once a week for this podcast during the year of 2010. And until next week, be safe out there in cyberspace.